about it. Looking back over my life, Lord, you really been good to me. When I was down and out, didn't have a dime, you made a way for me every one of those times, and you brought me.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO, Portland.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
Welcome to An Islamic Point of View, a production of the Muslim Community Center of Portland and this station. We bring you a very special episode today in memory of El-Hajj Malak al-Shabazz, or as you may know him, Malcolm X. Today marks the 56th anniversary of his assassination. And in today's special episode, we would like to explore a little of his journey in Islam through his own voice.
Could you tell me, or you'd be willing to, or do you think it's relevant, some detail of your own conversion to Islam?
Well, I was in prison.
I know that fact, yes.
And
it's in the interior feeling of the process.
Yes, well, I was in prison, and I was an atheist. I didn't believe in anything. And I had begun to read books and things. In fact, one of the persons who started me thinking seriously was an atheist. And he impressed me with his knowledge, and I began to listen very carefully to some of the things he said, and it was he who switched my reading habits in a direction away from fiction to non-fiction, so that by the time one of my brothers told me about Islam, although I was an atheist, I was open-minded, and I began to read in that direction, in the direction of Islam, and everything that I read about it appealed to me. And one of the main things that I read about it that appealed to me was, in Islam, a man is regarded as a human being. He's not measured by the color of his skin. At this point, I hadn't yet gotten deep into the historic condition that Negroes in this country are confronted with. But at that point, in my prison studies, I studied Islam as a religion.
This is getting ahead a little bit, but it seems to apply here. Islam teaches the human worth of all men without reference to color. How does that fact relate to the message of black superiority and the doom of the white race?
Well, the white race is doomed not because it's white, but because of its deeds. And the people listen very closely to what the Muslims have always declared. They'll find that in every declaration there's the fact that the same as Moses told Pharaoh, you're doomed if you don't do so-and-so. Or as Daniel told, I think it was Belshazzar, Nebuchadnezzar, you are doomed if you don't do so-and-so. Now, always that if was there, which meant that the one who was doomed could avoid the doom if he would change his way of behaving. Well, it's the same here in America. When the Muslims deliver the indictment of the American system, it is not the white man per se that is being doomed.
It's not blood itself that's being, there's no blood damnation, man.
No, but see, it's almost impossible to separate the actions, or it's almost impossible to separate the oppression and exploitation from the color of the skin of the person who is the oppressor or the exploiter. So he thinks he's being condemned because of his color, but actually he's being condemned because of his deeds, his conscious behavior.
Let's go back to the matter of your conversion. Some details of that. Was it fast or slow? A simple matter as that.
It was fast.
Flash of intuition.
No, it was fast. Strange as it may seem, I took an about turn overnight.
Really overnight, just like
yes.
That.
Malcolm, on your trip abroad, you said you sensed a feeling of great brotherhood, and that conceivably you would be working toward integration in this country now. At least this is what you're reported to have said. Have you any comment on it?
I don't think that I ever mentioned anything about working toward integration. If I recall, I'm pointed out that while I was at Mecca making the pilgrimage, I spoke about the brotherhood that existed at all levels and among all people who were there on that Hajj, who had accepted the religion of Islam. And I pointed out that for what it had done, what the religion of Islam had done for those people over there, despite their complexion differences, that it would probably do America well to study the religion of Islam, and perhaps it could drive some of the racism from this society as it has driven racism from the Muslim society.
Drive is aiming for this goal?
Well, I can't say that the current integration drive is aiming for that goal, because it hasn't realized the goal in any state. They haven't even got integration right here in New York City. You have worse integration problems in the North than they have in the South. So if it doesn't work, if you can't bring about integration in New York City as international, cosmopolitan, up-to-date as it's supposed to be, you will never get integration anywhere else in the country.
Malcolm, have your experiences with white-skinned Muslims in Africa and the Middle East made you feel that relations is any more possible?
When I was on the pilgrimage, I had close contact with Muslims whose skin would in America be classified as white, and with Muslims who themselves would be classified as white in America. But these particular Muslims didn't call themselves white. They looked upon themselves as human beings, as part of the human family, and therefore they looked upon all other segments of the human family as part of that same family.
Well,
now, they had a different look or a different air or a different attitude than that which is reflected in the attitude of the man in America who calls himself white. So I said that if Islam had done that for them, perhaps if the white man in America would study Islam, perhaps it could do the same thing for him.
I think what a lot of people are interested in, Malcolm, is whether this experience has made you feel that your feelings have changed, that the animosity you have expressed in the past toward all whites...
There's one thing that I want to make clear. No matter how much respect, no matter how much recognition whites show toward me, as far as I'm concerned, as long as that same respect and recognition is not shown toward every one of our people in this country, it doesn't exist for me.
I think you're right in my camera.
The audience will have to be quiet. As I pointed out when I was during my traveling, that African nations and Asian nations and Latin American nations look very hypocritical when they stand up in the United Nations condemning the racist practices of South Africa and that which is practiced by Portugal and Angola, and saying nothing in the UN about the racist practices that are manifest every day. Even in South Africa, those Africans aren't faced with bayonets and aren't faced with police dogs. So were these African nations knowing the brutality that is inflicted upon black people in this country simply because those black people are trying to get what the Supreme Court said they were supposed to have 10 years ago? I would be not a man. If I was in a position to bring it in front of the United Nations and didn't do so, I wouldn't be a man.
Malcolm, do you intend to lead the charge in the United Nations?
Well, I find that to say you're going to lead something creates a lot of hostility, division, jealousy, and envy. I hope to work with any group of leaders or any group of organizations to do whatever is necessary to see that this problem is brought before the United Nations.
Have you had any commitment from any nations in Africa to support your move?
I would rather not say at this time. But one thing I found in my travels, all of them look upon us as their long-lost brother.
You realize the implication is that you have had such commitments when you say...
This is your interpretation of what I said. One thing that I found in all of my travels was that all of the Africans, not only the Africans, but the Asians and the Muslims, look upon us as their long-lost brothers. And America had actually tricked many of them into a hands-off policy by giving them the impression that she was honestly trying to do something to solve the problem. My argument over there was designed to prove that it is impossible for the United States government to solve the race problem. It's impossible for a government which has 16 senatorial committees, over which 10 are chairmaned by Southern segregationists, and 20 congressional committees, over which 12 are chairmen by Southern segregationists. This is a segregationist, racist government that's controlled by people from the South. They can't solve the race problem.
And both of these are hard to come by. This one isn't as hard to come by as this one, but this one is called Africa's Lost Past, the Startling Rediscovery of a Continent. And this was put together by professors who were commissioned by the nations that belonged to the UN after the Africans got their independence. After the Africans got their independence, they expressed complete indignation over the misrepresentation that the African continent had received while they were under the domination of the white man. So they pressured the UN to take some of the leading scientists of this day to delve into the true history of Africa and compile a pamphlet on the lost civilizations. And so this book is a record put out by the UN, endorsed by the UN, which means it has the recognition and endorsement of all civilized, free, and independent nations on this earth. And in this book, it tells you, in a nutshell, about the Islamic civilizations that existed in Africa in the 8th century. The Islamic civilization, you know what that means? Muslim civilization. It means that the Muslim empire, that the Muslim religion, that the Muslim culture, Muslim civilization was throughout West Africa in the area called Ghana, Guinea, Ivory Coast, Gold Coast, Nigeria, all down through there, vast Muslim empire in the 8th century. You know what I mean by 8th century? In the year 700 something. Wait a minute, 8th century. Yeah, right. Yeah, 700 something. This means 800 years before America was discovered. 800 years before America was discovered. 800 years before you were kidnapped and brought here. I have to emphasize kidnapped and brought here because some of y'all think you come over here as pilgrims on the Mayflower. But 800 years before our forefathers were kidnapped and brought here, the white man admits today that the Islamic civilization, the Muslim civilization, stretched throughout Africa. And he has to admit it now. Here in one paragraph it says, in some ways the most valuable of all the Arab sources are the first-hand reports of the two, as far as I know, the only two Arab traveler authors who made extensive journeys through the Western Sudan. And by Western Sudan in those days, they meant Africa. All of Africa was called the Sudan, because Sudan is an Arabic word that means, it's plural for black. When you say Sudan, you're talking about the land of the blacks. So here, it's speaking of these two Arabs who made journeys through the Western Sudan, which means West Africa. Ibn Battuta and Leo Africanus. Both were remarkable men. Muhammad ibn Abdullah ibn Battuta, notice how they call him, they didn't say Jim Jones. Muhammad ibn Abdullah ibn Battuta, that's the kind of name you had before you came here, was born at Tangier in 1304. Pick up on this, 1304. America wasn't discovered until 1492. That's almost 200 years later. and spent the greater part of his life traveling through the Muslim world of his day, visiting Arabia, Asia Minor, Khorasan, India, China, and Indonesia, as well as West Africa. You notice now what he said. He traveled through the Muslim world. And all of these countries that he traveled in were parts of the Muslim world. And he said, as well as West Africa.
Are you prepared to work with some of the leaders of the other civil rights organizations?
Certainly. Certainly. We will work with any groups, organizations, or leaders in any way, as long as it's genuinely designed to get results.
How would you say this pilgrimage to Mecca has altered the course of your relations with the movement of Elijah Muhammad?
Well, I don't know. I'm not here to discuss the movement of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in any way. I would say this, that the pilgrimage at Mecca would be an anthropologist's paradise, because it's the only event and the only spot on earth that has every specimen of humanity in the same place at the same time, practicing brotherhood and in harmony. It's the only place where I've ever seen brotherhood practiced by people of all races, of everything.
Has this been a religious experience?
Definitely. I went because of my religious beliefs, and I think that I have a better understanding of my religion. I was a state guest while I was there for 12 days. The Prince Faisal, who was the present leader of the government, he made everything available to me to give me every opportunity to get a better understanding of the religion of Islam. When I first got there, I was in a compound because it wasn't known that I was there. And once they found out I was there, they put me in a suite at the Jeddah Palace Hotel, gave me a car with a chauffeur and a mutawif who could speak Arabic and take me wherever I wanted. I could go back and forth between Mecca and Jeddah every night if it was my desire. I have never been given more hospitality and treated with more brotherhood than I was treated in Arabia by the Muslims there.
Does your new beard have any religious significance?
No, not particularly, but I do think that you'll find black people in America, as they strive to throw off the shackles of mental colonialism, will also probably reflect an effort to throw off the shackles of cultural colonialism, and they may begin to reflect desires of their own with standards of their own.
I ask you another question that may seem a little silly, but it's the question of the names. I think a lot of people are confused by the new Arabic name, El Hajj Malik El Shabazz.
I've always had the name on my passport, Malik El Shabazz, only I only used it in the Muslim world. Well, Hajj is a title that is given to any Muslim who makes the pilgrimage to Mecca during the official Hajj season.
Well, will you now use Shabazz and drop X?
I'll probably continue to use Malcolm X, and I'll probably use it as long as the situation that produced it exists.
You don't feel that Shabazz takes the place of X?
My going to Mecca and going into the Muslim world, into the African world, and being recognized and accepted as a Muslim and as a brother may solve the problem for me personally, but I personally feel that my personal problem is never solved as long as the problem is not solved for all of our people in this country. So I remain Malcolm X as long as there is a need to protest and struggle and fight against the injustices that our people are involved in this country.
Malcolm, you know, you've changed a lot since your first appearance on this show some years ago. At that time, you were sort of a stormy patriot and you hated all whites, you said.
I've gotten older.
Something to that effect. Now you have a different attitude completely. You told me once that your religious experience in Cairo has changed your attitude and your outlook.
Well, as a Muslim, since I left Elijah Muhammad's Black Muslim Movement, I should say since they put me out, because that's what they did, I've had a chance to do some traveling, and travel does broaden your scope. And as a Muslim whose religion is Islam, as it is practiced and taught in the Muslim world, I realize that it is impossible to call oneself a Muslim, to call one's religion Islam, and at the same time judge a man by the color of his skin. When I went to Mecca, I was faced with this decision. I was faced with the decision of believing what Elijah Muhammad had taught me and using the criteria of judgment, the color of the skin, or I had to accept Islam as it was taught in the Muslim world, which doesn't use color as the color of the skin as the criteria. Rather, in the Muslim world, in the religion of Islam, you judge a man by his behavior, by his conscious behavior, by his intentions, by his deeds. This is the yardstick by which a person is judged.
This poses two very interesting things. In other words, you no longer believe, as Elijah Muhammad has been quoted as saying, that all white men are devils. You have changed that thinking.
If what Elijah Muhammad says, that all white men are devils, then you have the King of Arabia, King Faisal, who is white. He is the keeper of the holy city of Mecca. And many other Arabs there on the Arabian, not only in Arabia, but in Egypt, in Algeria, and other places. They are, from all appearances, white.
Now this poses a second problem I'd like to get your opinion on. Of course, you may be biased because you no longer are a member of the so-called black Muslims. But is the black Muslim a religion or not? Because this is coming up in the case in Chicago where a prisoner in Statesville converted from Roman Catholicism to the black Muslims, and he demanded to be able to be allowed to practice his religion in the jail. The warden denied this because he said the black Muslim was not a bona fide religion.
Well,
how do you feel
about
that?
I want to answer that with this explanation first. Number one, no one can use me against Elijah Muhammad or against the black Muslim movement. On the other hand, anything that Elijah Muhammad says or does, or the black Muslim movement says or does, which I feel is against the best interests of the black community, then I'll attack it myself. But I won't attack it because someone sicks me on it. I don't let anybody use me to fight their battles. No one can say that what he teaches is not a religion, but it is not the religion of Islam. The religion of Islam is based upon brotherhood. It is based upon belief in Allah, the creator of the universe, infinite, omnipresent, omniscient, what's the other word, omnipotent. And whereas Elijah Muhammad teaches that God is a man who came to America in the flesh and taught him what he knows, Islam teaches that belief in all of the prophets, especially Muhammad ibn Abdullah, who was born and died in Arabia 1400 years ago. And the Muslim believes that Muhammad of Arabia was the last prophet, last messenger, whereas Elijah Muhammad teaches that Muhammad of Arabia was not a prophet. He was an enthusiast, and that he himself, Elijah, is the prophet. So that what he's teaching, as his son Akbar said in a press conference in Cairo a couple of weeks ago, what Elijah Muhammad is teaching is diametrically opposed to the principles of Islam. And the Muslim world itself, the religious officials at Mecca and the religious officials at Al-Azhar, which is the top authority on Islamic theology, totally reject what Elijah Muhammad teaches as being any phase even of Islam. On the other hand, what he's teaching can easily be defined as a religion, but it cannot be labeled Islam. And whereas the brother in prison is concerned, I learned about Islam in prison myself. And I think that if the penal authorities were farsighted enough to permit the religion of Islam, real Islam, true Islam, to be taught in prison by qualified Islamic religious leaders, as they let Judaism, Catholicism, and the Protestant religion be taught there, then many of our people who are in prison wouldn't be misled like I myself was. Because there's a vacuum in this country where Islam is concerned, and the black Americans know less about the religion of Islam than anybody else, the true religion of Islam. And in that vacuum, it's easy for any phony or faker to come along with a concocted, distorted product of his own making and say that this is Islam.
Are you, by inference, saying that Elijah Muhammad is a faker and a
phony? If Elijah Muhammad really believed in the same God that I believed in, I believed in Elijah Muhammad stronger than he believed in himself. I believed in his God more than he did. And I was not aware of this until I found he was confronted with a crisis in his own personal moral life, and he did not stand up as a man. Anybody can make a moral mistake, but when they have to lie about it and will be willing to see that murder is committed to cover up their mistake, not only are they not divine, they're not even a man.
Doesn't Elijah Muhammad preach nonviolence and no use of guns and weapons and so forth?
When I was in the black Muslim movement, we never carried weapons. We were taught against that. And we were never taught that we never actually fought at any time. We were told that God was going to come, you know, and do all these things. When the Muslim brothers were beaten in Louisiana, we weren't allowed to fight back. Nothing was done to equalize the situation. Elijah told us that God would come and do it. But to show you that there's lack of consistency, now he orders his followers to go out and attack each other, to mutilate each other. If the ability, the talent, the skill, the know-how that the black Muslim brothers have been trained into were used against organizations like the Ku Klux Klan or the White Citizens Council or the racist elements in this country, then I could somewhat go along with the present trend of their fighting each other too. But when all of their physical energy is expended fighting only fighting each other, then I say something is wrong.
Are you trying to tell us that there's been an attack on your life because of your withdrawal or dismissal from the Muslim organization?
I've had several.
You have?
And just thanks to Allah, so far I've been successful. But I'm like this. I believe that when you're a black man born in this particular society, you are faced with certain dangers already. You get used to it. And plus, the stand that I took when I was in the black Muslim movement was uncompromising. I defended an indefensible position, I think, and he was that indefensible position. Anybody who defends an indefensible position as well as I did, they must have believed in it.
You want to apologize to me for our first argument many years ago?
No. I won't apologize for this reason. You see, I don't think that the burden is upon any black man in this society to apologize for any stand that he takes for this reason. Most of us are attracted to things extreme, primarily because of the extreme negative condition that we live in and that has been permitted to exist already far too long.
Yeah, but our first argument, Brother Malcolm, was not over that condition, which I readily admitted. Mine was over the position of the black Muslim, the very thing that you are now denouncing.
Mm-mm.
And let me say this. Mind you,
when I denounced it, I said this, that I'm not denouncing it because society wants me to or some agency wants me to. And I'm not denouncing, I can explain its existence and defend its existence. The burden...
That's because you're very glib and very able with words.
The black Muslim movement is the result of the failure of a society. The hate that exists in the American society is what has produced the frustration that exists in black Americans.
Yeah, the Ku Klux Klan.
That makes, no, it's a different thing altogether.
But the same thing.
No, it's a different thing.
It's the result of racial hatred, is it?
No.
Sure.
The Ku Klux Klan is a part of the society.
It's a result of racial hatred.
No, the Ku Klux Klan...
Black Muslim is a result of the racial hatred at the other end.
Sir, the Ku Klux Klan is a part of a society which has absolutely failed in its fulfill its promise for 22 million black Americans. And it is the part of that society that has been used to frighten the black Americans into taking positive action to eliminate the negative conditions. Now, the black Muslim movement is the result of frustration that exists among black people and who see no hope of the society itself creating a real door, so they take the door that is placed in front of it. Now, I myself, as I said, am a Muslim who believes in brotherhood and who believes not in judging a man by the color of his skin. But on the other hand, I have to face the reality of the fact that I live in a society in which brotherhood has not become a reality. And because of that, then I have to take a stand that is uncompromising on the side of my people against anything or any person that stands in the way of our being recognized and accepted as human beings in the same context with all of humanity.
You have been listening to An Islamic Point of View here on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Today's special episode was in memory of the 56th anniversary of the assassination of El Hajj Malik al-Shabazz, otherwise known as Malcolm X. If you've benefited from today's programming, please show your support through donation at mccpdx.org and here at kboo.fm. Islamic Point of View is brought to you each week here on KBOO, Sundays at 8 a.m. Thank you for listening and have a blessed day. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Good in the Hood Multicultural Festival from Saturday, June 26th to Sunday, June 27th from 3 to 7 p.m. streaming online. Good in the Hood is a family-friendly, multicultural music, arts, and food festival that connects people with resources and experiences to strengthen unity in the community. Again, that's Good in the Hood Multicultural Festival on Saturday, June 26th and Sunday, June 27th from 3 to 7 p.m. streaming online. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.